Vantakaputu vyascha kribasindhu vai vacha Vipitinam pavane vyo Vaisnave vyo namo namo Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasari Gaurabhaktivinodam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Pranjana at the beginning of this pastime, as Maharaj Prachini Bhavishad is telling, is hearing from Narada Muni. King Paranjana, in this allegory, is wandering, searching for a wife, practically speaking, because that will bring him his happiness. So he meets his wife, who is known as Paranjani, and they move into the city. And they become very, very, very attached to each other by her submissiveness, his heroic qualities. They become inseparable. Once, although Paranjana was very dutiful and very respectful and very, practically speaking, obedient to his wife, one day he went hunting without her permission, and when he came back, she was very upset with him. This is the nature of household life. Something happens or another, and then there's some fighting or something, and then there's making up. Why not? Even this goes on in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. Of course, on a different level. But in any case, after we're beginning text chapter 27, so the great sage Narada continued speaking to Prachini Bharishad. My dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways, because she became so disturbed, she lied down on the ground, and naturally he went to her, what's wrong, what's wrong? And then he gradually pacified her, softened her mind. And then in this way, she brought Paranjana, her husband, under her control. So he is the king, but yet he is under the control of his wife. So the wife of King Paranjana gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him. Prabhupada explains in the purport, by coming home, this is sort of in the, about a third of the way in the purport. By coming home, taking his bath, eating nice foodstuffs, getting refreshed, and searching out his wife, King Paranjana came to his good consciousness in his family life, because he was out enjoying improperly. His hunting was considered improper activity, done without his wife, in the allegory. So, in other words, Prabhupada explains a systematic family life, him being with his wife and enjoying with his wife as enjoined in the Vedas, is better than an irresponsible, sinful life. If a husband and wife combine together in Krishna consciousness and live together peacefully, that is very nice. However, if a husband becomes too much attracted by his wife and forgets his duty in life, the implications of material life will again resume. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended anasaktasya vishayan. Without being attached by sex, the husband and wife may live together for the advancement of spiritual life. The husband should engage in devotional service, and the wife should be faithful and religious according to the Vedic injunction. Such a combination is very good. So there's, practically speaking, four different considerations or combinations here that I mentioned. One is Paranjana going to the forest to enjoy without his wife. So that is the worst. Better than that is for him, to act responsibly and have a good a marriage with one wife and enjoy in that way. A third level is understanding that there is a spiritual purpose of life, But then forgetting that and getting involved in the pleasures of family life, as is the tendency, wastes one's situation of human life. And then finally, Prabhupada explains that if the husband and wife engage in devotional service, each performing their own duties, then one can make advancement. So four different situations are described. So in any case, Paranjana, on one level, came under the control of his wife. On one level, that was better than him going and acting irresponsibly. But on another, very realistic level, he was neglecting, being captivated by sensual pleasures. He was neglecting the actual purpose of life, which we have been given, human life, to actually fulfill that purpose. And joy as one may, it comes, it must come, it will come for each and every one of us, that our life ends. And then where are all the pleasures that we spent our life's time? Where are they? What is actually the gain? So, continuing the story, and this point is going to come out. So, the queen took a bath and dressed herself nicely with all auspicious garments and ornaments. After taking food and becoming completely satisfied, she returned to the king. So, in other words, she gave up her moroseness of mind and then returned to her regular position as the queen due to the king's sweet dealings with her. Upon seeing her beautifully decorated, attractive face, the king welcomed her with all devotion. Purport. A woman is generally accustomed to dress herself nicely with fine garments and decorative ornaments. She may even sometimes wear flowers in her hair. Women especially dress themselves up in the evening because the husband comes home in the evening after working hard all day. This is in days long past. This is a culture that's more or less dead at this point, especially in the West. It is the duty of the wife to dress herself very nicely so that when her husband returns home, he becomes attracted by her dress and cleanliness and thus becomes satisfied. In other words, the wife is the inspiration of all good intelligence. Upon seeing one's wife dressed nicely, one can think very soberly about family business. When a person is too anxious about family affairs, he cannot discharge his family duties nicely. A wife is therefore supposed to be an inspiration and should keep the husband's intelligence in good order so that they can combinedly prosecute the affairs of family life without impediment. Queen Paranjani embraced the king, and the king also responded by embracing her shoulders. In this way, in a solitary place, they enjoyed joking words. Thus, King Paranjana became very much captivated by his beautiful wife and deviated from his good sense. He forgot that the passing of days and nights meant that his span of life was being reduced without profit. Prabhupada's purport. We'll read a bit from many of Prabhupada's purports here. Now, there is a particular purpose to how Narada Muni is explaining things to Paranjana, and that will be clear just at the end of the chapter. So far, everything is going very sweetly. Actually, they are truly in love. They are deeply in love. Even though they may have their quarrels, yet love wins out. The king and queen appear to be living happily ever after. But there is something that the king forgot, that each happily spent day meant that he was getting closer to death. Purport. The word pramada in this verse is very significant. A beautiful wife is certainly enlivening to her husband. So this is that second level, that the man is captivated by his wife, which is much better than him living an irreligious life, being captivated one after another by one woman after another. The word pramada means enlivening as well as maddening. Generally, a household that does not take the passing of days and nights very seriously. So he's in the second category. of just enjoying life. And after the days come, the nights come. This is the law of material nature. But a man in ignorance does not know that when the sun rises early in the morning, it begins to take away the balance of his life. Thus, day after day, the span of one's life is reduced. And forgetting the duty of human life, the foolish man simply remains in the company of his wife and enjoys her in a secluded place. Such a condition is called apakrishta chetana, or degraded consciousness. Human consciousness should be used for elevation to Krishna consciousness. But when a person is too much attracted to his wife and family affairs, he does not take Krishna consciousness very seriously. He thus becomes degraded, not knowing that he cannot buy back even a second of his life in return for millions of dollars. The greatest loss in life is passing time without understanding Krishna. Every moment of our life should be utilized properly, and the proper use of life is to increase devotional service to the Lord. Without devotional service to the Lord, the activities of life become simply a waste of time. So sometimes in some purports, Prabhupada glorifies his dealing with his wife because she's giving him good intelligence, fixing his intelligence properly on family affairs, which is the basis of society. But yet, from the long range or spiritual perspective, this is fully insufficient. Day after day, night after night, every rising of the sun, we're thinking it's a new day, but actually it signifies a day complete or another day and night complete. Have we come closer to Krishna? That's the question. The rising of the sun is an opportunity, but for what? For what? Can we take some steps closer to Krishna? So Paranjana wasn't thinking in this way at all. He was just captivated in the small, constricted circle of his affection for his wife. The consciousness is constricted in that way. Really, it's not satisfying, but an illusion. One is enamored by all the duties within. So in this way, text 4, increasingly overwhelmed by illusion, King Paranjana, although advanced in consciousness, remained always lying down with his head on the pillow of his wife's arm. In this way, he considered woman to be his ultimate life and soul. Becoming thus overwhelmed by the mode of ignorance. Why ignorance? Because ignorance means the lack of knowledge. What is his lack? What is his... First ask, what is his knowledge? His knowledge is that human life is meant for the enjoyment between myself and Paranjani. That is, that type of knowledge is ignorance. False knowledge, ignorance. So he could not understand, due to his being influenced by the mode of ignorance, he could not understand the meaning of self-realization, of his self, or of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Human life is meant for self-realization. First of all, one has to realize his own self, which is described in this verse as nijam. There has to mean oneself. Then, he has to realize or understand the Supersoul, or Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, when one becomes too much materially attached, he takes a woman to be everything, or a woman takes a man to be everything, or both take their children to be everything, or people take their cars to be everything, or their gardens, or their house, or their dogs, or their pet fish, or their bank balance, or their golf score, or... People become enamored by so many distractions, forgetting, and that's what they are forgetting, that the sun is rising and the sun is setting and the sun is rising and the sun is setting again and again. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is therefore said, Mahat Sevam Dwaramahova Muktes Tamodaram Yoshita Sangi Sangam. If one associates with Mahatmas or devotees, his path of liberation is open. But if one becomes too much attached to women or to persons who are attached to women, that is, attached to women directly or indirectly, he opens Tamodaram, the door to the darkest region of hellish life. So in contemporary civilization, men and women, young men and young women, they are practically speaking trained to be attached and attracted to each other and to become absorbed in each other. Text 5. My dear King Prachinibhaisad, in this way, King Paranjana, with his heart full of lust and sinful reactions, began to enjoy sex with his wife, and in this way, his new life and youth expired in half a moment. Why is it said that it expired in half a moment? What's the meaning of that? Does it mean literally in half a moment it was gone? Or was it day after day, year after year? Why is it said to be half a moment? So quickly, and when you're 40 or 50, or 60 or 70, you think, you look back and it seems just like that, and you look at young people running and jumping and swimming in their youthful bodies, and you think, I was like that. But this body no longer can run and jump and swim and is not attractive anymore. But I was like that. How long ago? It just seems like yesterday. But when people look at me, they don't see it like that. They see an old man. But yet it seems like just yesterday, a half a moment ago to me. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The word navam vaya are also significant in this verse. They indicate the period of youth from age 16 to 30. Who's in that period? Raise your hands if you're in that period, 16 to 30. The period of youth. Sastra? No. You're still 12, I think. No. Soon you will be there and then you will understand. Huh? 1200. So old. These 13 or 15 years of life are years in which one can very strongly enjoy the senses. We can go and strongly enjoy our senses. When one comes to this age, he thinks that life will go on and on and on, and he will simply continue enjoying his senses. But time and tide wait for no man. The span of youth expires very quickly. Although when one is in those ages, one never thinks it's going to happen. One who wastes his life simply by committing sinful activities in youth immediately becomes disappointed and disillusioned when the brief period of youth is over. The material enjoyments of youth are especially pleasing to a person who has no spiritual training. If one is trained only according to the bodily conception of life, he simply leads a disappointed life, because bodily sense enjoyment finishes within 40 years or so. After 40 years, one simply leads a disillusioned life because he has no spiritual knowledge. For such a person, the expiration of youth occurs in half a moment. It seemed like it was just there, and now where is it? So those people, they'll sit in the pubs and cry. Thus King Paranjana's pleasure, which he took in lying down with his wife, expired very quickly. Text 6. The great sage Narada then addressed King Prachinibhaisad. O one whose lifespan is great! In this way, King Paranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Paranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. O Prajapati, King Prachinibhaisad, in this way King Paranjana also begot 110 daughters. All of these were equally glorified like the father and the mother. Their behavior was gentle and they possessed magnanimity and other good qualities. After this, King Paranjana, king of the Panchal country, where is Panchal? You know? Who is called Panchali? Yes. And where is she from? You don't know. Punjab. Yes. So the king of the Panchal country, Pranjana, in order to increase the descendants of his paternal family, he married his sons with qualified wives and married his daughters with qualified husbands. So, Prabhupada speaks in this purport very positively about arranged marriages, so everyone isn't out stalking each other. But people in this culture, in these days, were very dutiful. Very dutiful. So if their marriage was arranged, whether it was exactly to their liking or not to their liking, they would stick with it. Very dutiful. But nowadays, even in India today, when someone has an arranged marriage, it's called an arranged marriage, and when someone chooses its own wife or husband, it's called a love marriage. But when you have love marriage, there is love unmarriage too. There's divorce. Because the point being duty. Duty is what keeps a marriage together. So Prabhupada in the verse speaks very positively of arranged marriages. So Paranjan expanded his family. And when you have so many sons and daughters, there's always someone who's happy and always someone who has a problem. So one is completely captivated, enwrapped, and entangled. That's the word. Entangled in the goings-on of the family, the good and the bad. Of these many sons, each produce hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchal became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Paranjan. So, what does this mean in the analogy, in the allegory? Prabhupada explains in his purport. We must remember that Paranjan is the living entity, and the city Panchala is the body. The body is the field of activities for the living entity, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Chetra Chetragya. There are two constituents. One is the living entity, Chetragya, and the other is the body of the living entity, Chetra. Any living entity can know that he is covered by the body if he only contemplates the body a little bit. Just with a little contemplation, he can come to understand that the body is his possession. We can understand this, that we're not the body, just by looking at it a little bit, that we own the body. One can understand this by practical experience and by the authority of the Shastras. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Dehinasmin yata dehe kamaram jovanam jara. The proprietor of the body, the soul, is within the body. The body is taken as the panchal desh, or the field of activities wherein the living entity can enjoy the senses in their relationship to the five sense objects, namely ganda, rasa, rupa, sparsha, sabda. That is, the sense objects made out of earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Within this material world, covered by the material body of subtle and gross matter, every living entity creates actions and reactions, which are herein known allegorically as sons and grandsons. So this is what we are actually creating in our life by our activities, karma. We act and we get reactions for that. And those reactions, they weigh us down. So there are two kinds of actions and reactions, namely pious and impious. In this way, our material existence becomes coated by different actions and reactions. And these perpetuate our bondage because the reactions, we have to receive them either in this life or in future lives. So therefore, with every day, we are getting hundreds of years possibly worth of entanglement and future reactions that we have to suffer. Text 10. These sons and grandsons were virtually plunderers of King Paranjana's riches, including his home, treasury, servants, secretaries, and all other paraphernalia. Paranjana's attachment for these things. Now, if they were plundering, I want this, I want that, and the children naturally think of the parents' possessions as their own. So they took everything, they used everything. So if plunderers come to your house and they take all your all the goods and money and things that you've worked your whole life to accumulate, how would you naturally think of them? You'd be so upset with them, you'd try to kill them, practically speaking. But when the plunderers, in Pranjana's case, were the family members, his attachment for these things was very deep-rooted. In this verse, Prabhupada explains, Ritta Harishu, meaning plunderers of wealth, is very significant. One's son. So Paranjana was attached to both things, the family members and the paraphernalia. But Prabhupada will explain, or the verses later will explain that one tolerates all these things due to the attachment to the family members. So in any case, one's son's grandsons and other descendants are ultimately plunderers of one's accumulated wealth. There are many celebrated businessmen and industrialists who produce great wealth and are highly praised by the public, but all their money is ultimately plundered by their sons and grandsons. In India, we have actually seen one such industrialist who, like King Paranjana, was very much sexually inclined and had half a dozen wives. Each of the wives had a separate establishment that necessitated the expenditure of several thousands of rupees. When I was engaged in talking with him, I saw that he was very busy trying to secure money so that all his sons and daughters would get at least 500,000 rupees each. Thus, such industrialists, businessmen, or commies are called mudhas in the shastras, or donkeys, or fools, or sometimes this word is translated as rascals. They work very hard, accumulate money, and are satisfied to see that this money is plundered by their sons and grandsons. Such people do not want to return their wealth to its actual owner. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savadoka Maheshwaram. The real proprietor of all wealth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the actual enjoyer. So-called earners of money are those who simply know tricks by which they can take away God's money under the guise of business and industry. After accumulating this money, they enjoy seeing it plundered by their sons and grandsons. This is the materialistic way of life. The great sage Narada continues. So the tide is turning in Paranjana's life. My dear King Prachinibharishad, like you, King Paranjana also became implicated in so many desires. Thus he worshipped demigods, forefathers, and social leaders with various sacrifices, which were all very ghastly because they were inspired by the desire to kill animals. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the great sage Narada discloses that the character of Paranjana was being described to give lessons to King Prachinibharishad. Actually, the entire description was figuratively describing the activities of King Prachinibharishad. In this verse, Narada frankly says, like you, yata bhavan, which indicates that King Paranjana is none other than King Prachinibharishad himself. Being a great Vaishnava, Narada Muni wanted to stop animal killing and sacrifices. He knew that if he tried to stop the king from performing sacrifices, the king would not hear him. Therefore, he is describing the life of Paranjana. But in this verse, he first discloses the intention, although not fully, by saying, like you. Clearly, Narada Muni is making the point that animals should not be killed in the name of religion. And this goes on very commonly in almost all the religions. In in the Bible, in the Old Testament, right in the beginning, it describes how God, what does He give for food for Adam and his descendants? He gives them fruit and vegetables. And then later on, there's a flood, and there's not enough fruit and vegetables. The flood, of course, was with Noah and his ark. So at that point, He says that you can eat meat, because there's no fruits and vegetables after the flood. But He says, for still you can eat it, but for every drop of blood that you shed for your eating, it will cause you to shed a drop of your blood. Right in Genesis. It's there. So the tricky people, what they do is they have the kosher system. So they kill the animals and they don't allow any drops of blood to spill. So for every drop of blood that spills, you have to, so they, that's their answer to that. So we'll kill them so that there's no drops spilling. So you can't get around the law of God in that way. You kill, you cause so much pain to God's creatures. They're also the sons and daughters of God. They're like little children, have no intelligence. And if we take advantage of them and harvest them and kill them in that way, there's such sin and reaction in this. It is so hard-hearted. So in the name of religion, using religious formulas to kill animals, thinking that it's all right, means that your heart is like a stone, like a rock. You cannot, because a soft-hearted person, a person who is religious, a little bit purified, he cannot tolerate the pain of another. It is painful for him, what to speak of organized slaughterhouses. When we used to live at Gita Nagari in the United States, a farm community, there was a big slaughterhouse in the local town. And you'd always see that the people who worked in the slaughterhouse, practically speaking, you could tell them who they were by two characteristics. One is they looked very grotesque. And the other is they always wore high boots, rubber boots, because the blood and the horrible things in the slaughterhouse was this high, and they would have to walk through it. So disgusting, so disgraceful. And how can that not affect your consciousness, what to speak of, cause sinful reactions for the present and the future? So Prabhupada speaks, he's criticizing, showing how Narada Muni is criticizing Pachini Bahishad indirectly for engaging in this animal sacrificing in the name of religion. So now we're moving further. So he has his family, thousands of relatives, his sons and daughters are married. Thus King Paranjana, 12, being attached to fruitive activities, Karmakandiya, as well as kith and kin, this family, and being obsessed with polluted consciousness. That's what it is. It's an obsession. It makes no sense, but the mind is driven by desires regardless of how sensible it is. It's just, obsession means all one knows is only that thing. So he eventually arrived at the point, not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. So you can imagine what that point is. I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. In this, King Paranjana, this is the second paragraph, King Paranjan finally arrived at the point of old age. In old age, the senses lose their strength. And although an old man desires to enjoy his senses, and especially sex life, he is very miserable because his instruments of enjoyment no longer function. Such sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Some foolish Russian scientists also claim they are going to make man immortal through scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. So Prabhupada speaks very bluntly. And people generally believe this. People in general think that it's just a matter of time before the scientists give us artificial eyes, nose, hands, legs, heart, kidneys, livers, etc., and we'll live forever. So such sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. Cruel death, however, comes and takes all of them away, despite their desire to live forever. This type of mentality was exhibited by Hiranyakashipu, but when the time was ripe, the Lord personally killed him within a second. O King, Narada says to Prachini Bharashad, in Gandhava Loka, there is a king named Chandavega. Under him, there are 360 very powerful Gandhava soldiers. Along with Chandravega, there were as many female Gandhavis as there were soldiers, and all of them repetitively plundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. So we'll read some of these purports. Time is figuratively described here as Chandavega. Since time and tide wait for no man, time is herein called Chandavega, which means very swiftly passing away. As time passes, it is calculated in terms of years. 1 year contains 360 days, and the soldiers of Chandavega, herein mentioned, represent these days. Time passes swiftly. Chandavega's powerful soldiers of Gandhava Loka very swiftly carry away all the days of our life. As the sun rises and sets, it snatches away the balance of our lifespan. Thus, as each day passes, each one of us loses some of life's duration. So, how old am I? I'm 53. I'm 53 years closer to death than I was when I was born. That's one way to look at our age. It is therefore said that the duration of one's life cannot be saved. But if one is engaged in devotional service, his time cannot be taken away by the sun. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ayurhartivaipamsan ujyanastam sayanaso. The conclusion is that if one wants to make himself immortal, he should give up sense gratification. By engaging oneself in devotional service, one can gradually enter into the eternal kingdom of God. So day by day, men and women lose their lives. Some of the purport 14. In this Kali Yuga, the demoniac mentality is employed in manufacturing various machines to facilitate the process of sense gratification. There are so many machines for ordinary household activities. There are machines for washing dishes, cleansing the floor, shaving, clipping hair. Today, everything is done by machine. All these facilities for sense gratification, so even there's a machine for talking to people. Yes? So many machines. Everything is done by machine. So when people are, everyone is enamored by that, thinking that this is what progress means, this is what's glorious, that everything is done by machine. So all these facilities for sense gratification are described in this verse as sarva kama vinirmitan. The time factor, however, is so strong that not only is our span of life being expended, but all the machines and facilities for sense gratification are deteriorating. Therefore, in this verse, the word valumpanti, plundering, is used everything is being plundered from the very beginning of our lives. The plundering of our possessions and lifespan begins with the day of our birth. One day will come when death will finish everything, and the living entity will have to enter another body to begin another chapter of life and again begin the cycle of material sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj describes this process as punas punas chavitachavananam. Materialistic life means chewing the chewed again and again. The central point of material life is sense gratification. In different types of bodies, the living entity enjoys various senses, and through creating various types of facilities, he chews the chewed. Whether we squeeze sugar out of the sugar cane with our teeth or a machine, the result is the same, sugar cane juice. We may discover many ways to squeeze the juice out of the sugar cane, but the result is the same. So when King Gandhavaraj, Chandavega, and his followers began to plunder the city of Paranjana, a snake with five hoods began to defend the city. So old age has come. Prabhupada's purport. Up to the age of 50, one can actively work for sense gratification. But after the 50th year, one's energy decreases. Although one can, with great strain, work for two or three more years, perhaps up to the 55th year. Thus, the 55th year is generally taken by government regulations as the final year for retirement. The energy, which is fatigued after 50 years, is figuratively described herein as a serpent with five hoods. So, Paranjana's very street life, if we remember the beginning of this fable, this storybook fable of love and marriage, love at first sight, marriage, the king and the princess meet, and they live happily after and have thousands of children and etc., etc. It's now going to end in a way that everyone's body will end. So old age has come after having been plundered. And that's what age is like. Everything is plundered, one thing after another. One's eyesight is plundered, one's digestion is plundered, one's teeth are plundered, one's hearing is plundered, everything is plundered. The joints of one's body become plundered, one's hair is plundered, everything is plundered, one's skin is plundered. One's strength is plundered, one's mental energy, physical energy is plundered. Okay, so we'll stop our tale of plunder here. And we'll continue tomorrow. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll hear. Actually, it's going to go on a little bit further. Any questions or comments? Pretty exciting, huh? This ruins all the fun. Sasra, you have a comment? One little comment. Paranjana didn't give his wife to Krishna. That's the problem. Huh? Just both analogies. Any other comments? Oh, that's a nice necklace, isn't it? That's for Gonatai? Okay, if there are no questions, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam, Tuesday. Tomorrow we continue.